Looking for your next favorite podcast? Start here.
There's an activity in there we've done many times in our classes where you randomly choose a physical characteristic, a job, and an emotional characteristic, and you put them together and you build a character out of it. It's really funny and fun, and it demonstrates definitively the power of juxtaposition. Just put those non-aligned things together and your mind starts working. I can't tell you how many students have gotten bizarre combos like melancholy jockey who wears colored contacts and then gone on to actually love those characters and use them in stories.
Going through that day taught me how quick life can be and the value of human life, and it also made me a deeper person.
Craig grew up in Littleton and came from a large family which included his older sister Rachel.
We went from that x-ray room up to the fifth floor at Cincinnati Children's, where it was hard to look through the doors at all the children there. Who knew that they were saving all these lives and that all these kids had cancer?
On the way today, samples from Out on the Wire, Witness History, and the Dragonfly Effect. Welcome to Start Here from Cincinnati Public Radio. I'm Trip Eldridge, your podcast jockey. Each week, we sample and highlight three podcasts to help you navigate the exploding podcast world and maybe find your next podcast obsession. Plus, get an email summary of each podcast we feature with our weekly Start Here email blast. Just go to wvxu.org/subscribe and select the Start Here blast email at the bottom of the page. And if you like what you hear, please rate us at Apple Podcasts. A 5-star rating will help others find us in the iTunes gallery. With special thanks to Cincinnati Public Radio's Wiser Advisors, Jim Nolan and Kevin Reynolds, and writing research and curation support from Connor Eldridge, let's start here. For all you aspiring novelists, hobby writers, and storytellers out there, you'll want to check out this week's first featured podcast, Out on the Wire. The show isn't like other podcasts you've heard. It's got a beginning, a middle, and an end, just like the stories you want to tell. It's an HBO miniseries mashed up with an online class and a writing memoir. How's that? Every episode of Out on the Wire is jam-packed with insight from the best and the brightest in narrative nonfiction radio, comics, novels, and more, and ends with a writing challenge that'll get you thinking and developing your craft. You can simply listen along as veteran cartoonist and host Jessica Abel works through the stages of writing something, or you can create your own story right along with her. Take a listen to this clip from the first episode of Out on the Wire titled Eureka. The episode's about ideas, where they come from, and how to come up with ones that suit your writing style. In this clip, Jessica's joined by such entertainment experts as Ira Glass, as they talk about the building blocks of every story, ideas.
Taste is about what captivates you, which of course gets straight back to the idea that you should work to amuse yourself, like Ira said earlier. Amuse yourself, and you'll realize you're following your taste. What will keep you going for however long it takes to get through it? I've got a funny story about how I managed to amuse myself. A few years ago, actually quite a few, it was in December 2006, I was working on my textbook about how to make comics, drawing words and writing pictures. I collaborated on it with Matt Madden, my husband and fellow cartoonist, and we were working on a chapter about how to create characters. There's an activity in there we'd done many times in our classes where you randomly choose a physical characteristic, a job, and an emotional characteristic, and you put them together, and you build a character out of it. It's really funny and fun, and it demonstrates definitively the power of juxtaposition. Just put those non-aligned things together, and your mind starts working. I can't tell you how many students have gotten bizarre combos like melancholy jockey who wears colored contacts, and then gone on to actually love those characters and use them in stories. Anyway, I had Matt give me those keywords for two characters so I could draw some illustrations for the book. Here are the prompts Matt gave me.
Cheerful. Spiked collar. X Games. Worrywart. Wears a skirt. Tour guide.
And I came up with a roller girl and a seven-legged Martian. The second part of the assignment is to put the characters together into a scenario and build a story structure. So I gamely put Trish Trash, my roller girl, on Mars and invented a wacky caper plot involving a stolen suitcase and then drew another illustration to suggest that storyline. It was just an example for our textbook. I wasn't trying to come up with anything deep. But days later, I still felt myself drawn to the idea. And on Christmas Day, 2006, I jotted down a few notes.
Roller derby is the biggest Earth sport. Mars is the farm league. It's not competitive. Bad roads, too many rocks, dust, wind. Martians use wheels. very uncool. All right, a farm machine breaks down and she gets this hollow image asking for help. And she has to find an old Martian. Yeah, okay, so she gathers a girl gang in high school and has like all these sidekicks, like old Wonder Woman from the 40s.
That's just goofy. Clearly riffing on Star Wars and the silly illustration I'd done for the book.
Immigration problems? All brown kids. Political strife, maybe? Blonde Earth teams.
Which is where I start to feel the pull of my usual more serious concerns in fiction. Class struggle, institutionalized racism, complicated personal relationships. About 20 minutes into making my first page of notes on this idea, and I was off. 6 months later, I had read up on leaf harvester ants, bee colonies, various theories about terraforming Mars, and I was halfway through Kim Stanley Robinson's Red Mars trilogy. I went to a bunch of derby bouts and talked to players. And as bits stuck to it, my idea grew from a silly Nancy Drew on Mars romp to a massive, world-spanning story touching on climate change, class conflict, and coming of age. I built a world in my mind, and eventually, with the help of my assistant Lydia Roberts, I drew it. It's now almost 9 years later, and I'm finally close to finishing the book. Making this book has been an epic struggle, but it all stems from three prompts.
Cheerful, spiked collar, X Games.
And Trish isn't even really all that cheerful anymore. I paid attention to my attention, and I dove in, way, way in, 8 years and two planets in. And let me say again, this is my taste. Someone else would see roller derby and Mars and be like, whatever, and keep walking. I mean, that person would clearly be nuts, but hey, different strokes.
That was Out on the Wire with Jessica Abel. Learn the principles of storytelling in prose, comics, audio, video, or whatever suits you with Out on the Wire. Available on WVXU's Podcast Central. They say there are three sides to every story. My side, your side, and the truth. The only really way to know what happened is to see it for yourself. And now, with the help of this week's featured new podcast edition, you can live vicariously through history's most significant moments through the eyes of the people that actually witnessed them. On Witness History from the BBC World Service, you'll get a first-hand look at humanity's biggest milestones, the atrocities, and the triumphs that have brought us to this point. From World War I to the invention of the first at-home pregnancy test, Witness History has a vast collection of first-hand accounts that brings the world's most important stories to life. And to get you started, try on this snippet of Witness History covering the 1999 mass shooting at Columbine, Colorado. The first school shooting of its kind, Columbine rocked the United States in a way that in many ways it still hasn't recovered from. In the wake of the recent 20-year anniversary, Witness History goes inside the tragedy to explore how witnesses reacted both from inside the school and the surrounding communities.
13 people were killed and 24 injured in the shooting. One of the survivors of Columbine was then 16-year-old Craig Scott.
Going through that day taught me how quick life can be and the value of human life, and it also made me a deeper person.
Craig grew up in Littleton and came from a large family which included his older sister Rachel.
My sister and I went to school together. I was in grade 10. She was in grade 11. She was a very kind person, great sense of humor, very witty. I was on the wrestling team. I was a jock at school. I didn't really care about the same things that she cared about. I cared about my image, what trying to fit in, what other people thought of me.
On the morning of the 20th of April, 1999, Rachel drove them both to school.
We were in an argument in the car, and I was yelling and calling her names as we were approaching the school, and the last time I had with her was I slammed the car door shut on her.
That was the last time Craig saw his sister alive, because at about 20 past 11 in the morning, 18-year-old Eric Harris and 17-year-old Dylan Klebold began their attack outside the main building of the school. Rachel Scott was one of the first victims, shot sitting on the grass with a friend who was also hit.
Jefferson County 911.
Yes, I am a teacher at Columbine High School. There is a student here with a gun.
Okay, has anybody been injured, ma'am?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And the school is in a panic, and I'm in the library. I've got students down under the table, kids. Heads under the table.
Craig was in the library at the time and heard popping sounds coming from outside.
It was near the end of the school year, so I thought the popping noises might be a senior prank. Grade 12 pull pranks before the end of the year, and so I thought maybe they brought some firecrackers to school. So I didn't think much of the noise, and then a teacher ran to the room. She was completely frantic. She was screaming that there were two students outside the school with guns shooting other students and told us all to hide. So I got underneath the table with two of my friends, Matt and Isaiah.
The two shooters were dressed in black trench coats. One had a shotgun, the other a semi-automatic.
The library was the first room they came into. Immediately they were shooting off their guns. They were mocking students before they shot or killed them. They treated it like it was a game. At one point, they said, get anyone with a white hat on. A lot of jocks at my school wore white baseball caps, and so I had one on. I took it off and put it underneath my shirt. They saw my friend Isaiah, and they were dragging him out from underneath the table. And they shot and killed Isaiah, and they shot and killed Matt.
Craig was still hiding underneath the table when the two gunmen left the library and found himself praying for guidance.
And that's when I felt like I heard God tell me to get out of there. And all of a sudden I could think and move. I was the first student to stand up. So I yelled at everyone, let's get out of here. I think they're gone. I heard someone asking for help. And there was a girl rocking back and forth underneath the table behind me. She had her shoulder blown off from a shotgun blast. And I helped pick her up. And a group of us ran out of an emergency exit. There was a police car outside. And as soon as we got behind that car, the two shooters came back into the library, exchanged gunfire with the police, and I realized that I got out of there just in time. And I was just so thankful to be alive.
More police arrived on the scene to help evacuate Craig and the other students who had managed to escape.
Right before I left, someone tapped me on the shoulder and said, I think there's a girl that's been shot over there. And I didn't realize that I was looking at my sister, Rachel. And so that was a day that changed my life forever.
A sample from Witness History with host Ashley Byrne. Learn the truth of history from the people who actually saw it firsthand on Witness History, now available on WVXU's Podcast Central. Our local Cincinnati podcast this week is a powerful new one from the Dragonfly Foundation. The Dragonfly Foundation provides aid and support to families with kids who are victims of pediatric cancer. And their new podcast, The Dragonfly Effect, is a celebration of those efforts and the changes they can make for families. On the podcast, you can enjoy interviews, heartwarming stories, and advice from families overcoming the challenges of pediatric cancer. With emotional, relational, and practical support, relevant information, and caring, nurturing experiences, the foundation and the podcast hope to make the journey even the slightest bit easier for families and kids alike. Let's give you a quick sample of the Dragonfly Effect from their first episode called Founded in Friendship. The episode features the history and early milestones of the Dragonfly Foundation as told by its co-founders and hosts, Christine Knightsky and Rhea Davidson.
So I'm a mom to two boys, Sam and Matt, and Matt was 10 years old, and one summer he just started complaining about breathing. He was having problems gasping for air, and I did what a mom should do. I took him to the pediatrician. We ended up going to several other places to investigate asthma and allergies, and nobody could find anything wrong with Matt at all. And finally, by December, he ended up catching pneumonia, and they took an x-ray.
We were together at lunch, and we kept saying, oh, it's going to be nothing. It's probably just scar tissue, because Jessica had bronchitis so many times, and never thinking.
And we had this call from the pediatrician saying, you know, Christine, I think you and Jim should take Matt down to the hospital and get a scan. Something showed up on the x-ray. So I was nervous, and you helped calm me down. And my mind never, ever, ever went to cancer. You just don't think about that with your child, and especially trying to be a healthy mom and vegetarian. And we ended up going down to Cincinnati Children's Hospital that evening. And next thing we know is we got a call from our pediatrician. They told us not to leave. And she said that they thought that Matt had cancer. And then an oncologist came down. I didn't even know what an oncologist was. And he came and sat in the room with us. And they directly admitted Matt. And that moment changed our lives forever.
Changed both of our lives, actually.
Both of our, yeah.
You know, to go from, you and I both were consultants enjoying very different types of careers, and then next thing you know, it's amazing how your life can change almost in an instant.
So many families struggle with that cancer diagnosis, and as we had our own struggle, everyone has a personal journey with it. But I think at that point in time, we knew we would do whatever we could do to help Matt get through that diagnosis. And a few days later, he was diagnosed as having Hodgkin's lymphoma, stage 3A, and they immediately started chemotherapy. And after 3 months of chemotherapy, he went through 3 months of radiation. We went from that X-ray room up to the fifth floor at Cincinnati Children's, where it was hard to look through the doors at all the children there. Who knew that they were saving all these lives and that all these kids had cancer? And I think at that point in time, they maybe had 40 beds mm-hmm. on that unit. And there were babies and there were young adults and there were teenagers. And it was very depressing and very hard. And you knew that every parent there was going through the same struggle that you were going, even though it was a different type of cancer. But the uncertainty of knowing if your child was going to live or not, it was very difficult, a very, very difficult time.
Matt also had lots of complications, too, and reactions to the medications. And
that's why cancer with kids is so difficult, because their bodies are so young and they don't know how they're going to respond to certain chemotherapy and different
treatments
out there. And, you know, for adults, it's difficult too. But, you know, Matt found out that he was allergic to one of the chemotherapies, bleomycin, and he basically flatlined 2 times. And if I could pick the worst time of my life ever, those 2 moments in time were something that no parent should ever have to go through. And fortunately, they were able to save his life. Every day was a struggle. And Rhea, you were by our side, I mean, by phone, by texting, by your body being there, by whatever support. I remember.
From the local podcast, The Dragonfly Effect, the new podcast for Cincinnati-based nonprofit, The Dragonfly Foundation. You can listen now on WVXU's Podcast Central. It's chart time, our weekly visit to the top of the Apple Podcast charts to see what's hot by iTunescharts.net. Well, a hot new podcast just debuted last week, and thanks to its powerful host and intriguing subject matter, it's already number one with just one episode. It's called Analysis of Murder by Dr. Phil. In the first episode, Dr. Phil takes a deep dive into the lives of Dee Dee and Gypsy Rose Blanchard. Dee Dee Blanchard kept her daughter Gypsy Rose confined to a wheelchair and convinced everyone that Gypsy Rose was intellectually delayed, physically disabled, and chronically ill for most of her life. She also allegedly persuaded medical professionals to prescribe medications Gypsy Rose didn't need, test her for diseases she didn't have, and perform numerous other unnecessary surgeries. At 19, Gypsy Rose says she decided that killing Dee Dee was the only way to escape years of abuse. How did she carry out the plan? That's Analysis of Murder by Dr. Phil, now number one on the Apple Podcast charts. Thank you for joining us for Start Here, Cincinnati Public Radio's Discovery Podcast. For more information about podcasts we like, check out Podcast Central at WVXU.org. And remember, if you've got a podcast or an episode you'd like to recommend, email us at podcast at WVXU.org. Or call us at 513-294-8030, and we'll add your voice to ours. For now, I'm Trip Eldridge for Cincinnati Public Radio, and thank you for choosing to start here.